I have a like an internal software that's different than what comes with the, you know, computer for the microphone. And sometimes for whatever reason, you just have to touch it to, you know, you have to click on it and it's up and ready and looked right. But, you know, you just have to click it off and click it back on.
Michelle, sometimes everybody's internal software needs to be touched to be heard.
I completely agree.
All right, Michelle, we're here to do Halt and Catch Fire on West Coast Project. This is episode 304, Rules of Honorable Play. How did you like it?
Well, I'm going to reserve judgment because I'm going to assume as well. I like a lot of it. A lot of it I really like and I see a direction, but I really hope they go in a direction. Do we know... Is there like an end to this? I mean, is this one of those that has like an end date to it? Do we know that?
This series?
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that. I know it was kind of a shock that they got renewed for season 3.
Right.
And I don't think they identified like, okay, this is it, season 3, or we're going to have to try to have one more. Or right. We've been approved like unconditionally and it's up to them to stop when they want to stop. I think they have to get renewed again, first of all.
Well, I feel like if there's an end game, then it's a great series. I think it's just spectacular if there's an end game. If they're just showing us the same stuff, I kind of touched on this last week a little bit. If they're just showing us the same stuff over and over, then I don't like it so much.
What would you like the end point in history to be?
Well, I guess that in my mind, season 1 and season 2 with Joe and all the destruction that he did, if it were like a precursor of a really big, terrible thing that he did later on, then that would have had meaning because they were showing us, you know, past behavior, predicting future behavior and that kind of thing. But if they're just going to keep showing us Joe do the same thing and Cameron being the same person, kind of like she was with Craig in this one, I mean, she's got some experience behind her now. She's got some relationships behind her now, and she doesn't have to be this weird, awkward person unless they're leading us up to something. And if they are, great. I'll be really happy. A lot of the stuff is it's great, and I definitely see a progression. But then you see like the same things over and over. And like, I'm also even seeing a regression. I mean, look at Boz in this episode. What's going on with him?
I think he's evolving. We can get to him when we get to him. But I think like if season 1 ended and it was just the end of it, end of the series, that was it. You could have said that that was about the birth of the personal computer.
Sure.
If season 2 ended, you might have said, okay, that was the birth of gaming, maybe chats. And
sure.
if this ends, this is maybe the thing behind the thing. The real thing is the internet being developed, which I think is what they're referencing when Joe erases the whiteboard and goes back with Ryan and they construct the thing, the new big thing. I think they're referencing the internet. Because some of the stuff they talk about here. So I guess to answer your question, like this would be another good time to stop at the end of season 3 if they kind of wrap up the development of the internet. If they go beyond it, I mean, they can just pick a point in historical technology and say, okay, this is it now. This is the development of the tablet or the, you know, the whatever,
sure.
The whatever. They just have to find it. The internet would be a good place to stop, though. I mean, it would be a good place to end it. It's a pretty important time in history. But that's where I think they are now is with this ARPANET and the packets being sent across the internet or being packets being sent shipped through electronic data means is essentially the internet packet switching.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that. So I was actually going to ask you about that when we got there, but I'm glad you caught that.
Well, I'm not sure either, because I'm not sure how they're doing internet chat and gaming without having the internet. But the ARPANET was the early part of the internet, and that's the file that Joe has access to when he slides it across to Ryan. And credit to Wikipedia, but Wikipedia makes the pretty clever analogy that the internet is different, and packet switching is what they're referencing here in this episode. Packet switching is different from like a phone call. Like when a person called another person on a telephone line, it was like one person to another one person on a linear line, two points, a line in between them, they made a telephone call. A packet switch is like a mailbox where you could put a letter in it. You could put 10 letters in it in your mailbox. Postman would come and get them and ship them to 10 different locations. Okay. And that's what that's what the internet does with packets of data. It switches them and takes them across the whole web of webs, you know, the network of networks, essentially. And it moves data. It's like this phone call is a Skype phone call. Each little sentence and word we say is coded and put into data packets, right, and they're shipped between us on the internet. So I think they're talking about the internet, and I think that that's the new thing that's going to be the exciting new product that Joe and his team and Ryan or whoever his team ends up being come up with here.
And I think all of that is, I completely agree with you. I love the I don't know, it's almost like a afterthought though, because we are so into the characters, and I know the characters have to show it. And like you talked about Boz evolving, I'd like to talk about that when you get there. I think I see Gordon evolving or maybe declining or something. So there's that. But I'm not seeing maybe Donna. But Joe and Cameron, I'm just not seeing it. And since they are, you know, the beginning, at least, stars of the show, I'm just a little confused with where relationships are going to go with this. So I guess there's that. And was the title supposed to be sarcastic? Because, I mean, what honorable play do we have going on here? Cameron's leading Craig on and then act like she never spoke to him. All the stuff with Boz is weird in this and everything, and then Donna lying to Cameron, Gordon playing so dishonorably that he got his team disqualified, and
well,
it's rules of dishonorable play, right?
Yeah, rules of, they broke the rules, but they essentially achieved better goals with almost all those things. Gordon got the team together. They got thrown out, but who cares? You got the team to like appreciate each other and work together. Donna is going to get Cameron to do the right thing by lying to her, even though the lying to her is not really a good thing. But she can't fire those guys. They need those two guys. Cameron can't have any more tasks than she already has. She's already fallen asleep on her desk.
But that's the thing. See, Cameron's not evolving at all. But, you know, just it being called Rules of Honorable Play, it just seems funny, because what we're really seeing is a continuation of breaking the rules, and particularly like when we get to Joe, but he's doing the same thing over again.
Maybe it's appropriate to break the rules of honorable play to achieve success for everybody involved.
Okay.
Donna's lying to Cameron might help Cameron in the long run. And Gordon's breaking the rules inside the laser tag place might help that team in the long run. And I forget some of the other ones, but maybe we can figure them out when we get to them.
I kind of think that it's going to go in another direction, and I'll give my prediction at the end, and I could be completely wrong, but I really kind of think things may twist here, and if they do, that'd be interesting. It'd be horrible, but interesting. But speaking of Gordon, we keep going back to him, but I think this episode showed us more that his problems are psychosomatic again, right?
I don't know what's up with Gordon.
He's having trouble, it feels like, more when he's stressed. And he's having no trouble. They made it a real big point to show us that. The guys are, you know, throwing papers and acting like I mean, it's total chaos, and his symptoms are bad. And then when he gets all the guys together, and he's the hero, and he rallies them together at that laser tag thing, he notes how good he feels.
Yeah, if he's telling the truth.
Oh, he's telling the truth about Zero.
I think he's exaggerating. One of the guys on the other 20 Go to 10 podcast said that Gordon never puts his level above 6 when he writes in his notebook. So he's like keeping it artificially low, even when things are really bad. It looked really bad this time in the beginning. And then, yeah, he looked kind of cured by having the laser tag fun, and he put 0, no stress at all, no symptoms.
Right.
So, I don't know, he might be tamping it down a bit. But, yeah, I think that point is a good one, that he's found a way to alleviate some of his problems by having some recreational outlet.
Right. But then that would go to show that what he has is much more psychosomatic than it is just a physical thing, I think. And I think that's going to matter at some point. I don't think they would go this far to show us that if it's not going to have some kind of relevance. It doesn't make any sense. And also, one more thing before we get started, the guns with Gordon. Gordon playing with the guns the whole time. Do you think that's going to have, I mean, you know, because they're showing us that Gordon's declining. He's really stressed over declining for the most part. And then the guns.
Well, it was kind of funny that I think Cameron says to him at one point in here, just, you found the solution, take them all out back and shoot them.
Right.
And he did find that that's exactly what he did. He took them out back to the laser tag and they shot each other, and that was right. The solution.
Right.
It's kind of a funny play on it. But you think he's going to have a real gun somewhere in the future and start blasting people for his enjoyment?
Or maybe himself.
Well, I don't know.
Things get bad.
I didn't think about that. I don't think of Gordon as a harmful person. I also don't think he's insane. Like, I don't think on that ham radio he was talking to ghosts. I think he was really talking to real people.
He might have been. I noticed that they didn't put that on there on the show this time at all. And I don't know.
So a couple things, Michelle. I dove in. I actually Googled, when did the internet start? Because I'm trying to figure out, it's 1986 in this series. What's going on in 1986 with the internet? And so in 1986, there was this NSF-NET project, which is a part of the ARPANET thing that was developed. And it created network access to the supercomputer sites. So the internet started on the ARPANET, which was just universities and military talking to each other.
Right.
Like one site to another site. It wasn't like anybody could get on anywhere. You had to be kind of connected to get into it. And then they made the internet commercial later on in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then the whole ARPANET project was taken out. It was decommissioned in 1990. But the in 1985, the first .com domain was registered. So that was probably one of those university sites or one of those military sites. Mm-hmm. Or just one of the very first ones. So there really wasn't an internet yet in 1986. It was just the ability to process this data across networks. But you couldn't log on to your AOL or your CompuServe yet in 1986, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I remember when I was in nursing school, I think it was right around 90. And we had like a modem that we connected to, it was almost just like message boards or something, right?
Yeah, it was like a fax. You found another location and you did that handshake. You did data connection by handshake, by that screechy, you know, data audio connection, and you made data transfers directly from one point to another.
And I'm saying modem, that might not even be the word for what, you know, what I've played with, you know, with that. I don't even know.
So another couple things. The writer of this episode, Michelle, is Allison Tatlock, and she wrote some of the Stranger Things. I know you like that show.
Oh, yeah, I really did. That's pretty cool.
And she wrote She wrote some of the episodes in the old series, In Treatment, with Gabriel Byrne. I like that show. It was about psychology and psychiatrists and stuff.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
And then we get a little bit more info about the two up-and-coming characters, although it looks like they're up-and-coming and leaving probably pretty quick, Doug and Craig, and they're played by these actors, Joe Massengill and Joe Dinicole. And Doug is the chunky guy, and Craig is kind of the sweet, understanding guy. So we see a little bit more about them in this episode. So you ready to dive into it?
I'm ready.
All right, so we start out with Gordon in the microwave and his evidence of his unhealthiness here with the chaos around him and the, I don't know if the microwave's adding anything to it, but he keeps this headache and trauma diary and writes down all this craziness in it. And it's full of stuff now.
Yeah, I noticed that. There was a whole lot more stuff in there, but he's covering one eye and he seems to be having trouble with one eye, right? Because it shows him covering one eye and he's, and then it shows us the numbers, the countdown of the microwave, and you can see them clearly. And then he covers the other eye and you can't even discern that they're numbers practically. And then if you'll notice, I mean, he's like, first of all, who heats up a cheese Danish that long?
Old days of microwaves took a while.
That was crazy, though. I mean, that thing would be like a brick when you put in that plastic. I don't know, it was awful. But he took this hot food out. He spills his coffee. He's taking his medication with Alka-Seltzer. I mean, the guy's just falling apart here, right?
I went on a drive this weekend to the beach with a friend, and on the way I grabbed like a biscuit, like a breakfast biscuit, and they had one of those old school microwaves. The blocky one with the blocky button. The button was square. It wasn't like an electronic touch button. You know, you had to push it in and it would click and connect. And I had to microwave that sausage biscuit like 2 minutes, two different times, just to get it warm.
That is horrifying.
Yeah, so they weren't very good microwaves back, whatever. That's a long ago microwave in the 1986 era.
Yeah.
30 years ago. So, yeah, he microwaves it. But the next scene is the coding problems with the new guys, the swap meet dudes. They're picking on Cameron's code, and they're also pretty intimidated by this investor, Diane. But they're also like so sarcastic and childish with Cameron. At least Doug is. Right? He's like, if you don't like my code, you know, he's just being a baby about it.
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, because she's the boss, right? And I kind of made a note here. We have all of these kind of points of no coming back here. Because it's hard to come back from calling your boss a bitch. That's a hard thing to come back from. Donna's going to have a hard time coming back from that lie she told Cameron. That's not something you can just turn around from. Joe can't come back from grabbing that investor by the neck. I mean, we've got some really like definitive kind of end moments, I think, in this. Of course, I guess Doug and Cameron could make nice, but the other stuff, we just see a lot of pretty intense endings to some things.
Well, sometimes you burn bridges you don't ever expect to rebuild. Like, Joe's never going to want to be with that guy who's being sarcastic about gay people and the diseases and stuff. That's horrible.
It was really
so
bad.
So there's no need to ever rebuild that. I think Cameron and Donna can rebuild the little white lie. There's a reason behind that lie.
Yeah, I've got a theory. I'm interested in your theory on that too.
So, but Cameron's being sarcastic back to them. I mean, they're using, I guess, C++ code is a newer version of the coding that Cameron had originally written Mutiny in. It's a better code, but Cameron doesn't want to give it up. When we find out later, it's because it was her code. It was her, the only thing left in the program is her original code.
Right.
So he doesn't want to give that up. But the whole exchange is pretty childishly sarcastic.
Yeah, and she's kind of doing what she's always done. Remember, we talked about Joe doing it last episode, sitting there with the headphones on, coding. We see that with her. Nothing changes with her. And I wonder if they're showing us that.
Well, I mean, I sit with headphones and work sometimes. Why would that need to change?
Well, I guess it doesn't. But, I mean, the music was blaring. We didn't hear it blaring through the headphones because we couldn't hear it. But then when she unplugged everything, when she goes chasing Doug out of her office, it's really, like, loud and chaotic. And I just get the feeling, just continuously reinforced, that Cameron is just this chaotic creature that is not... She hasn't, nothing's changed. in her. And maybe that's why she doesn't want that code to change. I mean, she's obviously dislikes change, which I totally sympathize with. I do too. But she just doesn't seem to be growing or evolving or anything. And I think that they maybe, or at least the way I take it, is they show us that through these same headphones, loud music, coding that they first showed us in episode one with her. But maybe I'm just reading too much.
You'd rather have seen her sitting like cross-legged in a Zen position on a beanbag chair?
Right, doing a little Tai Chi or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't blame her. I don't call that evidence of her not changing. But maybe you're right. Maybe it is a point of reference to her staying the same. But I think they explain away why she doesn't want to change the code. It's not that, just that she's stubborn. It's hard for her to give up the past.
Right. But I think that's kind of, I think we're kind of saying the same thing, because I think that she doesn't want, I kind of think she's a little nostalgic for back then. And I think she just doesn't want to lose it. So she doesn't want to change. I don't know.
Yeah, she's totally nostalgic. She probably is going to go back and get that motorcycle. And that hurts her that the belongings of her dad are being distributed. So that's, you know, that's nostalgic. All right, next scene, Boz is joking around with Donna, and Diane comes in. And then they talk about the hostility between Cameron and the new guys. The goal is to eliminate resentment. Diane needs a date for the Bay Area charity that she's going to go to, and she wants Boz to go with her.
Yep.
So this is something you picked on last time. That's a good call. And they look pretty cool together. I mean, I guess I'm accepting that they could be together.
Does he seem at all interested?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. We got to talk about that when we get to that party, because I was a little confused by Boz's reaction to her, but I thought it was really neat. I really like this Diane character. When Donna says, well, nobody calls him John. And Diane's like, I do. I just love that. That is so great.
Yeah, like she has a special intimacy with him.
Yeah. And like she feels differently about him. That's her way of saying, I think I feel differently about him maybe than you guys do.
Yeah, well, we're going to see Boz not liking his role anymore as the town jester. And her calling him John, even though John's more formal, it's more intimate than Boz. Boz is the clownish jester name.
Sure.
He's not comfortable with that role anymore. He's going to be comfortable with the adult role of John, male relationship partner to Diane, I think. But anyway,
okay. I've got some questions when we get there. But
Gordon's holding a meeting to flowchart the two company systems together, the old SWAT meet and the mutiny with their new C++ and whatever code mutiny has. And a fight breaks out. Gordon's punched kind of by accident by getting in the middle. And it's what the F, and then credits come. I feel sorry for Gordon, Michelle. He's trapped between his health and his relationship and his whole search for meaning, the meaning of his life. I feel for this guy. I feel sorry for him. I used to just be kind of tired of watching him, but he's making this new pathos kind of work for him, I think.
Yeah. But I do think I saw a spark in Gordon. And I really like that. And I hope they show us some more of that. Even if he does have declining health issues and stuff like that, that spark I saw in him was really attractive. And it was compelling. And I hope they show us that. It was when he was drinking the beer and writing No Nausea, and Boz comes up and he's talking. And he's like, and they just don't like my method of warfare or whatever he said. It was so, and he was like smiling. He had like this genuine smile, and the man looked different. He looked completely different from this beaten down, premature aged guy that he was before. So I really hope that we get some more of Gordon
Well, he's got this serious medical issue that's more than this hypochondria that still looming inside him. That is Gordon's official end date, I think, that this medical problem isn't going to go away.
It may not go away, but We've kind of touched on this before, and I think you and I disagree on this. When they first diagnosed him, they said that it will probably progress, if I remember right. But then when he started having more symptoms and he went back after he had fallen in the garage, they said it has not progressed. This is all kind of in his mind. And I don't know if it's going to progress like that. I know you think it will. And I mean, I think eventually in his life it would. But I don't know that this is like the ticking time bomb as far as physically. I think that it's the emotional part messing with the physical part. But I mean, I'm just.
Well, guessing. If you have like a. Because Gordon's original problem is like lead solder did something to his brain or something. If you have a brain tumor and it's in your brain and it's pressing on your brain and it gives you seizures and it makes you act weird, it could stop for a while and you won't act weird for a while. And you might think you're going to act weird because, you know, part of it's like, oh, it's this pressure, this stress and pressure makes me feel funny. And you may have psychosomatic results of having that tumor, but you still got the tumor. He still got whatever that lead solder did to him within him.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Who's to say that whatever is in his brain caused any of his symptoms? He could have had that there for years and years and never had symptom one from it. And everything he's ever had, every symptom could have been psychosomatic. I'm just saying, I don't know that we know. Because there wasn't like, well, he had a brain scan done when he was 20 and he was fine. He had it done at 30 and it was there. We don't know when it was there. And we don't know that that's what caused this. And I just
didn't
keep seeing.
Didn't he like crash his car, come out of his car in that rainstorm in last season and just like he fainted to the ground? I mean, that's not psychosomatic.
Well, like who's to say? Everything in the parking garage was psychosomatic when he couldn't find his car and he fell down the steps and he like hurt his leg. I mean, all of that was psychosomatic. The doctor said it was.
Mm.
So I just don't know. I have not written Gordon off yet as being the guy who's definitely going to have some kind of physical illness that's going to take him out. But I could be wrong.
All right, after the credits, Donna and Cameron are looking at a house. I don't know why they're looking at a bigger, better place for a mutiny. It looked like season two's house. It looked like Cameron's house from almost exactly.
I don't think they were looking at a mutiny house. I think they were looking at Cameron, a place to get out of Donna and Gordon's house.
That makes sense. That's good. Yeah. So Cameron relates that she hates the new guys while they're out. It was kind of funny that this realtor like mistakenly thinks they're together as a couple. Donna and Cameron. But she hates the code. She hates C++. And Donna tells her that she set up a dinner to make nice between all the parties so that they can all figure it out and get along.
Yeah. And we find out here that they have a 2-year contract with them, and they also own part of Mutiny now. So that's pretty important stuff.
Guys, they could buy them out, though. You could still fire people.
Sure, sure.
And that's exactly what Diane suggests coming up. But Joe and Ryan are talking about the new project that they're going to do. They reference other companies that started off in one direction and then totally changed and became new and better by changing.
Right.
They mentioned a couple of Fairchild cameras turned it into a company that manufactured semiconductors. And remember that was Donna's name, her fake name, when she fixed the problem that the fake problem Joe created. She came up and said her name was something Fairchild to the media person.
I thought that, but that's her mother's name, right? So I think they were talking about maybe her father's company. Because Donna used her mother's name.
Was her father the chairman of Fairfield Cameras?
He did something. Remember, he brought the kids home like little Nintendos, but some kind of like handheld gaming.
Yeah, you're right. He did. Fairchild Cameras. I don't know if that's the same company or not.
I don't know, but that's good. I didn't catch that.
And then Coleco. You know, I always thought of Coleco as the little game, handheld game. I didn't know it was the Connecticut Leather Company. I didn't think about it. That's the acronym Coleco.
Wow.
Pretty funny. And then Ryan mentions, "Hey, yeah, and Mutiny too." And Joe just says, "Shut up."
Yeah.
And Joe goes through his thinking process and erases the whiteboard. They needed, Michelle, they needed a cell phone picture, a quick picture of that before you erase it.
Oh my gosh, Mike, that is exactly what I thought. I thought Ryan should break out his cell phone instead. And then I thought, no, he can't do that. It's exactly what I thought.
Well, in meetings, when everyone would always say, or the guy running the meeting would always say, "All right, everybody got this," everybody would just take a quick picture with their cell phone.
Yeah.
All right, back to Cameron coding, and with like you said, with her headphones, and that is her process. The new dude, Doug, comes in, kind of apologizes, and then starts to blame people and other things. He blames Bosworth, and he's just different than her, Michelle. He's Lacoste. He's got the Lacoste shirt, and she's just punk. She's got the headphones and the could care less about how she looks.
That's a great catch. Yeah.
He's got the collar popped up on his Lacoste shirt. He's just different from her. But that was a really quick scene. We jump over to her taking a call. It's her mom's boyfriend, or husband now, I guess, a stepfather.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And tells her they're moving and selling the house. They're moving to Florida. And he uses her name, Catherine. I can't remember Cameron ever being Catherine.
She never has been. But she did. They showed on the opening credits, like the... where they not credits, but where they show what was prior to Catch Us Up, they showed Boz asking her actual name, and she tells him it was Catherine, and that she used the name Cameron because Cameron was her father's name, and so she dropped Catherine and started using Cameron.
So Cameron's hurt by this. She says, "Well, why didn't she call to tell me this?" And I guess did we know about this specific clash between Cameron and her mother before?
You know, I don't remember that. I don't remember it at all. It had to have been like really early in season one or something, because I was trying to think of it too, and I just couldn't remember. I don't remember anything. I was going to ask you, what was the discourse between Cameron and her mom?
Yeah, I don't know. So one person is working late. At first I thought it was Lev because he's kind of a slight, handsome guy. But is Lev still even in the Mutiny team?
Yes, he is. He is. He was in the laser game.
All right. Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. But it's Craig. It's not Lev. It's Craig. And he's argued with Doug, too. And he talks to Cameron and tells why Doug is angry. And he's angry over selling Swap Meet, over having to sell their company, which is understandable.
Sure.
It made me realize, Michelle, people always have a reason for anger. It's never just a built-in part of them, like, oh, that's the angry guy. He's always angry. There's always a reason for being angry. So even these asshole guys have reasons for their anger. So I like that little reminder about that.
I think that's good, yeah. I think especially initially there's a reason for anger, but then I think sometimes that's just who you become. You let it kind of overcome you and it taints everything forever. But yeah, the initial reason, I completely agree.
Well, yeah, you got to manage it, but there's always something behind it, and sometimes you take the trouble to figure it out and it makes sense. And this is really pretty deep to Cameron. I think it would really make sense to her. Like, yeah, losing a company would be horrible. She could probably, that would be a quick understanding for her.
Sure.
But Craig and Cameron talk and drink, and they kind of figure this stuff out. He asks
she goes into Boz's office, right? And gets
his because that's where the booze was.
Yeah.
He asked, and she knew right where to find it, too. He asks her why she won't change the piece of code, and it's because it's the very last piece she did all by herself. It's the last thing that she really owns of Mutiny that's only Cameron.
Right.
And he compliments her. He says it's really fast and beautiful. And she tells him they're getting really pretty intimate here. She tells him that she's proud of Mutiny, but it's no longer her little secret, her little project, and how that she's kind of lost that intimate part of it. And Craig says, "Well, we should just leave it alone then. We should let that code live on."
Yep.
And she tells him about the phone call with the stepfather, their intimate thing, and tells him her dad died when she was 10 and they're selling off all his stuff. And a little story about him taking her to school on the Harley. And he says, "You should go get that Harley."
Yeah.
Just like your code.
Good advice.
You should hold on to it. Go find it and get it.
Yep.
And then he asks her, have you ever considered, or Cameron says, have you ever considered a solo venture? What do you think she meant by that?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if she is kind of pulling a Joe, because we see so many parallels between them, and if she wants to kind of take him aside and just have something with him, you know, Cameron and Craig, a separate kind of business or whatever. I mean, at first I thought she meant something in Mutiny, you know, just have like your own side thing in Mutiny apart from the swap meet stuff. But I don't think so anymore. I think she was talking about something outside of Mutiny with just her.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's just her thinking about just her starting her own little thing again and keeping it a secret and having it all hers and just being her solo project.
Well, right, because why would she, unless she just regretted saying that, why would she want to fire them the next morning? Unless that is what she was thinking. I can't imagine, although her character confuses me, but I felt like she was sincere when she said that to him.
She's sincere about both. She wants. Yeah. She knows she doesn't need them. She could do their work, even though that's a huge mistake in management. She doesn't have time to do their work. She could do it, but she doesn't have time to do it. Yeah. And she wants this. She wants to have something that she's a total 100% backroom secret closet owner of, that nobody can ever change and nobody will ever compromise and make partly theirs and make it better. She wants her own solo project.
I agree.
Interestingly, though, the next day he tells her that he wants to leave and start his own project. Pretty funny.
Yeah.
So we see next scene, Gordon shooting the ducks. Cameron comes home and says...
And he's covering the one eye thing again. I just wanted to point out there. He's covering one eye and doing it and covering the other eye.
Yeah. So it was a Cameron that says that Nintendo game was for Joni, like Cameron had given it to Joni as a gift or something.
Yeah, I don't think she gave it to him. I think Gordon and Donna bought it for Joni for her birthday. And he says, no, it was a family gift.
And this is where Cameron says, here's your solution to the guys with the coding. Just take them out back and shoot them.
Yep.
And we see that he does that. So Boz is now coming up at the party, at the Save the Bay party, and he's telling jokes. And we never get the full joke from Bosworth. We always hear kind of the ending of it or the middle of it.
Yeah.
And the ending of this joke is, that ain't a bear, that's your ex-wife.
Yeah, and he always throws his arms up. He's doing that throw the arms up thing, and it's just like this, you know, uproarious laughter around him as he's telling this. And Diane's standing there. She's like looking on with pride. She really likes this.
But as he's going to tell Joe later, he's getting tired of this role. He doesn't want to be the court jester anymore. He's the show with the dog and pony show. He's the dog or the pony. He doesn't want to be that anymore. He wants to be just probably more real than the clown in the room. Diane's watching him from across the room. She's mildly impressed by it. Like, I think she's glad that he can navigate himself through a room of important people.
Sure.
But she's not laughing uproariously. She's kind of watching him smiling, like mildly smiling.
Right.
Now, Joe is there. Did Joe kiss that guy or just lean in and whisper something to him?
I just heard him. Heard him. I just saw him whisper. I didn't see him kiss. I didn't.
Well, I think we did hear him. He says something like, don't go anywhere.
Or, right.
Or
right.
Be here when I come, something. It's essentially, don't leave.
Right.
And then Joe goes over to her, and they've never officially met, but she knows of him from probably the Forbes cover or just hearing about him in the industry.
Sure.
And then he knows of her boutique investment company, which is kind of a slight.
That was an insult, right?
It's kind of one, because that means you're little.
Right.
You're good, but you're little. You're boutique.
Yeah. Right.
He congratulates her on swap meet and on convincing Cameron to do it. So he knows that Cameron's kind of this lone wolf, let me code in my back room and I want to keep everything in mine and keep it secret and keep it my own. And she
but that was mean though, right?
It was sarcastic, but I mean, it's true. She did convince Cameron to give up her company and merge with these guys.
Yeah, not that. What I'm talking about is where he says he's surprised Cameron wanted to work with another company at all. You must be great. He's like putting this bug in Diane's ear that Cameron doesn't play well with others. And we see that theme again and again.
Yeah, but Diane's going to know that already.
Yeah, but to have somebody like Joe come up and say that, I don't know. I think it might have some kind of impact. And I think they showed us that it has some impact a little bit later on when she's thinking about Cameron.
I think it has to be partly true to be effective if you're insulting somebody. You can't just walk up to somebody and say, you're fat. You're fat and stupid. It's not really an insult. It has to be kind of a bent compliment to be a really effective insult.
Right.
So congratulating her, and you got that cool boutique investment company. That's kind of a more harder of a slam than a, you know, what's this crappy little company you have?
Right. That's a good point.
So Joe sees his partner and goes away to talk to him.
Does that guy just rub you every wrong way?
That guy is Matthew Lillard. I couldn't think of his name last time, but he is the guy from The Border. And he was the drunk guy in The Border. He's a really good actor. I love his
But I hate him, though. Don't you hate this character?
I hate him, though.
Yeah.
So he tells him some news that some kid had snuck into his party and drove away in a Ferrari high on cocaine. And his name is Topher, I think Topher Erickson. And he's the son of a big customer/investor.
Right.
I tried to watch this twice to see if he was, in fact, a customer or an investor. And I think he's both. Because he's part of that big company that has a deal with Joe's company to provide security. But I think he's also an investor. Anyway, we're going to meet that guy pretty soon. So Bosworth,
I think it's the same thing, right?
What's
that? Is there a difference in being an investor and, you know, like part of the company? I think it's kind of the same thing in this instance, right?
Well, there's a difference between being an investor and a customer.
Okay.
A customer is just like, hey, you sell me your security. And it was a big customer because he was 37% of all the billing that they had. Almost half.
Yeah. I kind of did the same thing. I kind of went back and forth because I thought he was an investor first, too. And I think we should also point out that the 18-year-old wrecked the Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
He left the party and he, like, wrecked this what? How expensive was it? They said. I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, does it matter? If you drove away in a Camry and wrecked it high on cocaine, you wouldn't be happy.
No.
An underage kid at your apartment.
Right.
So anyway, so that happened. So Bosnell comes over to Joe, thanks him for the phone call about his grandson. And so we're getting some sincere stuff now. There's no snarkiness with Bosworth and Joe. I think they are sincere about their congratulations and insults about each other's showmanship, because I think they know what's going on. Like, I think it's pretty clear, because it's like two smart comedians talking to each other. They know when they're joking, even though they're left-handed compliments. I think they're both onto each other.
Yeah.
So that's why I say I don't think it's like calling the boutique. I think it's more of a compliment than a underhanded swipe at each other.
Okay, that's a good point. I just could not really read that between the two of them. I got really mixed signals, so I think you could probably be right with that.
Yeah, because doesn't Bosworth say, I'm tired of being the Texas show pony here? He knows exactly, or Joe says it, one or the other. They know that's not veiled in any type of compliment. It's like, dude, they were communicating like perfectly with each other.
But Boz, when he was at Cardiff, he wasn't the show pony there. He was, and Gordon even brings it up later, how everyone feared Boz. And then it feels like he kind of, you know, he went to prison, and then he kind of turned into this show pony. And now it feels like he's kind of going, I can't tell if he's going back to being a more stern person, or if he's just sick of the whole corporation stuff and he's found something more authentic with Mutiny and he likes that. And I just can't tell which way that's going. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's empty. I mean, being in a room full of drunk guys talking about that, and that's how you masturbate a dinosaur. It's like empty. It's like those guys aren't going to like him. They aren't going to become his friends. It's showmanship. There's nothing real in it. And he does it again with his jokes this time. He's not going to come back and meet those Save the Bay Area charity people. He's not going to become friends with them. It's just his time on stage. I think that's why it's important, him and Diane, because his time with her is important. It's not show. It's important.
Okay.
So where are we? So
Diane comes up and fawns him.
Yeah, Joe goes right back to his boyfriend before that. But yeah, she goes, she connects with him now, and she tells him that he's the life of the party, and that she needed him so that she didn't have to fly solo. So she's being intimate with him. She tells him the real reason. I didn't want to fly solo at this.
Yeah, but he doesn't seem real receptive here.
Well, he might not be ready for it.
Okay.
She shares her feeling about her husband. I mean, she gets right into it with him. She's like kind of a no screwing around person.
Yeah, but he doesn't bite. He says she offers him a cigarette or something. He says he doesn't like parties or champagne or tobacco anymore. He's lost his taste for it somewhere along the way. And she kind of turns away from him when he says that. I don't know if he was saying, I'm not interested in you.
Well, I think they're saying that these two people are different. And this isn't just like, oh, step right into this relationship. We're perfect for each other. It's like they're different.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do the Bay Area charity. She probably likes doing those types of things. They're complicated. You know, he's tired of doing this act that he's been doing this whole time.
Right.
And he's perfect for her in that role, but maybe there is a role for him as an intimate partner with her and not just being the stuff suit at a charity.
Yeah, it just felt like he shut her down. And I was a little confused by that.
I think they're on a path to be together. I don't think this is going to be much of a speed bump.
Okay.
I mean, what else has he got?
I don't know. He seems really unhappy. You know, he just seems like he's almost suddenly unhappy. And I'm really curious to find out where they take us with that.
I think it's a realization. It's his growth, or it's his path now. He's like, he's realizing, I'm not going to do this every night, every weekend, or every business. I'm tired of this.
Right.
So Joe meets now with this customer who had the kid, customer investor who had the kid crash the car. And while they're talking about a kid coming into a party, sneaking in and getting high and screwing up while he's like intoxicated, they're drinking at the San Francisco office.
Right.
This guy's just a hypocrite. He's drinking and this guy looked like a real ass, this customer.
Oh, he's horrible. He's horrible. He fits right in with the other investor guy.
He's the vice president of one of the big customers, which is a company that uses Joe's security, from La Jolla. La Jolla is like a suburb of San Diego, a really rich part of San Diego. And they have, their company does packet switching, and they have a contract with the DOD, Department of Defense, which is probably part of this ARPANET deal. And that's what gets Joe, I think, thinking about the big internet thing coming up. So Matthew Lillard's there. He's drinking right along with the guy, partying right along with him. Mm-hmm. And he's making happy with everybody. He knows Joe's surfing instructor might be really interested in meeting this guy down in San Diego and teaching him to surf. And he's just making all these connections and schmoozing this guy.
Yeah, real kind of sexist comments and negativity toward women and toward his own wife. And it was hard to watch.
Well, Matthew Lillard is just playing up to whoever an investor is and being their friend, no matter what evil or good they're up to.
Yeah.
I don't even know Matthew Lillard's name in the show. Do you remember it?
No, I forgot. I knew it last time, but I don't remember.
But the kid's in trouble. Topher Erickson's in trouble with the cops for getting caught wrecking the car. And Joe claims not knowing about kids or drugs at his party, which is kind of a lie. He had to know about the drugs, right? He may not have seen a kid sneak in, but he had to know there were drugs there.
Well, they weren't carding anybody for sure when they came in there. So
the dude, the Erickson dude, says, all right, no problem. I'll smooth it over with the big boss, my wife. He kind of makes a joke out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then starts to make really disparaging comments about San Francisco and gay people. We've just seen Joe at a party with his bisexual friend.
Right.
So it doesn't go over real well with Joe. And then he makes this horrible comment about the special flu going around, and he hopes they all catch it.
Yeah, it was really bad. He said, as long as my son doesn't get it, but I've, you know, taught him better. So, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. It was really, really ugly.
So it's too much for Joe. He confronts him and kind of stands up for something good, does something good for once, and says that your son will be fine as soon as he gets away from you. And your wife is unfortunate to have you in your life breathing your stinking breath on her. Kind of really throws it right in his face, which was really good.
It was. It was a harsh statement.
So Matthew Lillard goes, and the guy storms out. Matthew Lillard goes right after him to smooth it over and try to keep him on the investment board, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening, though.
Well, and to keep his business, because remember, it's 37% of their income.
Right.
Of their billing.
Yeah, just keep all of them kind of intact, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No, it doesn't.
All right, so we come back to Cameron Coding, and who's the thin guy? Not Doug, the other guy?
Greg.
Greg thanks her for hanging out last night. And types on her screen, I don't know why he types this, because he could have just told her this, that he loves Doug, but they're not on the same page, and he wants to talk it over and with Diane and smooth it over. Why do you think he typed this?
Well, because he was kind of looking behind him, and I think he was afraid somebody would overhear, maybe. Plus, it put him close to her, so he got to go stand beside her, and it made it like this more little intimate, private moment. Maybe, than him just saying that?
Maybe. Like a shared little conspiracy is an intimate thing to do. Could have leaned over her and just said it to her, though.
Yeah, he could.
Typing it, though, I guess that fits the MO of the Halt and Catch Fire theme. Putting it on a computer. So now Donna comes in. Cameron admits that she'll integrate some of the C++ code finally. And says, I think we should fire these guys. We don't need them. It's pretty cold-blooded of Cameron. Let's get rid of these guys. We don't need them.
Yeah, and it's not just that. It's just stupid. I mean, it's really stupid. What's going on with her? Well, even if she doesn't like them, and even if they're right about it being a toxic environment and everything, it's only toxic because of Cameron. Well, that's not true. That's not true. It's a marriage. Kind of like Donna said, and there's going to be like some hiccups along the way, but Cameron does not see her limitations, and even though she's brilliant, it's like she can't see that she can't do this whole company alone. And you're right, you made a comment earlier about delegation. I mean, she has none, and that's not smart.
Well, I think there's a little mini theme in this episode about people not being ready for things. Like maybe Boz isn't quite ready for Diane. And so Cameron has these two dudes. One she just hates. He's pretty hateable, Doug. But the other guy, she kind of likes him. I think there's a pathway to maybe some sort of an intimacy there. I mean, maybe she's not ready for that. And getting rid of both these guys kind of solves both of those problems for her. One guy's just gone that she hates, and the other guy, if it's complicating things and she's going to be revealing herself to him, maybe she's not ready for that. Maybe she's pushing back against that.
Well, I guess so, but isn't that called, like, you know, illegal? I mean, you can't fire somebody because you like them and you don't want to like them.
Yeah, but you don't say that's why you fire them.
Well, of course not, but that's terrible. I mean, that's like...
People probably rarely get fired for the real reason that's noted in their record. It's probably for personal things, mostly. You don't like somebody, you get rid of them.
Yeah, but that's awful. That's awful. That's not who she should be.
That's life, though. That's not just Cameron. That's life. All right, let that sink in, Michelle.
Okay.
All right, at dinner in the game room in the laser tag place, I guess it's a whole dinner... bar, laser tag. I guess we saw that in Breaking Bad, huh? They had everything in there. It's a team-building deal that Gordon set up.
Right.
Gordon lines them up by height, and he does some stupid game about addressing the troops, kind of like the Dirty Dozen. Right, makes a military right. play. You know, it's kind of funny, I guess. I was just thinking, though, Michelle, this laser tag can't be good for Gordon's epilepsy or whatever the hell he's got going on in his brain. All those flashing lights and stuff. I mean, if the microwave freaks him out.
But see, doesn't that tell you something, though? Because he didn't have issue one in there.
I don't know.
Because he was having fun.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, you would think if any place would freak you out, it would be a place like that.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I don't know.
All right, dinner with the new guys now. They're all there except for Cameron.
Oh, I know. Just not showing. It was terrible.
The new guys, Diane and Donna, missing Cameron. They say we can work with her, but she can't work with us. And that you really can't go on with this meeting if all the parties aren't there. Right? They should have just not started into this conversation. Diane should have nixed it all.
Yep.
But they did make that quick little comment. Gordon at the laser tag place notes down zero nausea. And I think he's exaggerating on the low scale now.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he's happy and he's sitting there, you know, knocking back his beer and he feels like a dude again. And I think he's just happy. And I think that because he's so happy that he feels great and he feels physically great. That's my take.
All right. We'll see.
Okay.
He's going to be in a perfectly happy space, and then, bam, he's going to get hit with a total brain. His brain's going to explode.
Oh, man.
All right. Donna and Diane now, and Donna tells Diane Cameron wants to fire Doug and Craig, and Diane says she admires their talent, but if that's what it is, if they disrupt Donna and Cameron, they should go. If they rock the boat too much, they should go. But I hope it's the guys that are the problem and not Cameron.
Now, see, she brings it up because she's just heard this the night before from Joe about Cameron not being a team player. So she brings it up to Donna right here. And she asked Donna here, what do you think? And Donna can't come up with anything except Cameron's my partner.
I like that Diane unconditionally supports Donna and Cameron, even not knowing all the facts, even though they might be wrong. I unconditionally support you.
Yep, I agree.
Because it's their, you know, they're the ones. They're the core of the company.
Yep.
And she says if we need to buy these guys out early, we'll do it.
Yep.
So they can be gone if we want them gone. So now Boz and Gordon are at the laser tag talking. And he asked Gordon why he came by. He asked Bosworth why he came by. And he says, I came by because I said I would. Which is kind of interesting right on the heels of Cameron missing this dinner. She didn't come by and she said she would. But here's Bosworth, just because I said I would, I'd come by.
That's good.
Last place he'd ever wanted to go, it probably is a laser tag joint, but there he is.
Right.
And Gordon tells him that he prefers being one of the guys to being the boss. I think that might be more of the solution than anything. He needs the pressure taken off of him as any type of a leader. And he just wants to be one of the guys. Just wants to be one of the guys that everybody likes and not dislikes.
So he was talking about himself there and not talking about Boz? Because I thought he was talking about Boz. Well, I didn't think. I wasn't sure if he was making a comment toward Boz there. Because then he brings up how you used to be scary and I was scared of you and now everybody loves you and...
Well, maybe that's what he meant. You're right. Maybe he says to Boz, you prefer being one of the guys and not being the boss. Yeah, maybe right. I thought it might have been meant Gordon not being any type of a boss to anybody. But yeah, you're probably right about Boz. Because then the guys come up and try to get Boz to play laser tag. And he has to finally say, get the fuck away from here. I don't want us to do it. He says no, like kind of mean way back to them.
Yeah, and it takes them all back. They don't know this Boz. And that's why I was wondering if he's going back to the Cardiff Boz or if he's just evolving into something. But he seems unhappy.
I liked this generational separation of Boz saying no to these guys. Like, I didn't want him to cave and go, okay, go give me that damn laser gun. I didn't want him to do that. I'm glad he's forcefully said no.
Yeah, Me too. Yes, and I completely agree with that. I just want him to be happy, and he seemed like he wasn't. Or, I don't know, maybe he's just getting his confidence back. Maybe it took all that time after he went to prison and everything after the blow-up at Cardiff. And maybe he's just now getting his confidence back to be able to be the leader.
Exactly. He's on his way to being happy for what he really needs. He doesn't need to be the comic court jester. He needs to be whatever he's going towards now. That's what's going to make him happy.
Okay.
He looks happy, but it's fake happy as the jester.
Right.
All right. Donna storms back. She looks kind of angry to find Cameron and finds her collapsed kind of on her desk, and she melts a little bit, doesn't come in so hot anymore, and just says, "Hey, you missed your dinner." And as soon as she sees that she's like exhausted from working, she forgives her, tells her, "You're overworked and exhausted." And then she lies to her about how Diane won't fire them, and she said, "We have to work with them. It's what's best for the company." So I called this a white lie. It's not really a white lie, but I think it's an effective lie. It's out of character for Donna, but I think she's, I don't know if she doesn't think Cameron can take it, but it's an easy way to pave over this for now. It pushes the problem down the road a little bit, but it smooths it over for now. And maybe it's what needs to happen. Maybe it's a good call. Do you think it's a good call by Donna to lie?
Let me just say that. I don't think it's a good idea to lie. I think if she thinks they shouldn't be fired, she's a part of this company, and she should be able to go to Cameron and say, "No, you're overworked. This is ridiculous. You can't even meet your obligations now. There's no way you can take on more. As a matter of fact, you need to take on less." And that's how I think it should be handled. I think Donna can't do that with Cameron because Cameron, as we kind of pointed out last time, it feels almost like she is their child. And so Donna is like taking, I thought right here, more of a motherly role in that, okay, I'm going to do what's best for you and I don't have to explain myself, and this is going to be what's in not only your best interest, but our best interest. And that I could get behind.
Yeah, I think that's what makes this series interesting, is they can't do what, nobody can do what they should do. You know, right. They do little loops around what they should do, and they get ways to accomplish their goals other ways. That's what kind of makes it fun and interesting to watch. She should tell her the truth.
I don't know that this doesn't turn a little sinister.
Well, I guess we'll find out pretty quickly.
Yeah. I really think that, do you think Donna might push Cameron out? Well, I think Donna might be evolving in this too.
Anybody could push anybody out, so I guess it's part of business that could happen. It's just interesting because Cameron looks back at the darkened office like, this place isn't really mine anymore. This isn't my company anymore.
Right.
I've got to work with these guys because it's what's best for the company. But that's not my company. That's what's best for this new company that is now, as of yesterday, a different being than it was before we acquired Swap Meet.
Right. And it's almost like she's working at Cardiff again. It's almost like she's just a part of something in place of being the creator, certainly the sole creator of something. And she, you know, she doesn't like it.
So we jump over to Joe sitting Lotus on his couch.
Yep.
And he's called Ryan over in the middle of the night, and they tells him they've lost the Ericsson company, General Atomic, 37% of their annual billing. And Joe says, "Hey, don't worry, I traded them for something more valuable," and slips him the credentials for logging into ARPANET, the logon credentials he got through General Atomic to work their security, and gives it to Ryan.
Yep.
And this is the ARPANET's DoD packet switching, the whole baby internet, you know, the fetal internet here.
Yep.
And he got all this information, and he wants Ryan to take the password login information and research the company and just see what they're up to. And Ryan's right away not so impressed. He just says, "Yeah, the ARPANET's mundane stuff. It's just it's antiquated." Or Joe says this, I guess, antiquated and ripe for upgrade. So Orion doesn't see the future that Joe sees, which is an interesting comment on what their role is each in this. Like, Ryan's brilliant, but he doesn't see as far into the future as Joe does.
Right.
And Joe's repeating what he saw with IBM and DOS. He doesn't see what's the future is, what could be.
Exactly. That's what I was kind of pointing out. We see Cameron doing the same thing over and over. And we see Joe, unless this turns out to be like just a huge, huge thing, we see Joe doing the same thing he did with IBM.
So he says to Ryan, "I want you to map it and figure out what's next." I don't think Ryan's going to come up with what's next. I think he's going to map it and he's going to say, "Well, the packet switching coding looks like this, and the path they take is that, and here's what it does." And he's going to give him the technical rundown, but he's not going to see what's next. I think that's Joe's role.
Okay, that's interesting. I kind of think it'll be Ryan that'll, even if he doesn't see it, he'll say something that makes Joe see it. I think they'll work together with it because it's the same thing again. It's a Cameron and Joe thing, only now it's Ryan and Joe. So we'll see.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's going to make a distinction, though, between Ryan and Joe, that Joe can't just train somebody to be another him. It's a shortcoming that Ryan's going to have. Just my guess. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I think Joe can't train. You can't train somebody to be the genius seer of the future.
Well, right.
All right. Donna comes home to find Cameron and Gordon playing Duck Hunt. And
what was that look on her face when she saw that?
She's like, she's not like, "Oh, I caught you two messing around." But I think she's disappointed. Like, I don't know. Why am I in this world of craziness?
Of children.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I agree completely. Okay.
So Cameron says, "I need to find a way to make it work." I guess she's accepted that she's given up her company being her company, and they've got to work in with other people. And Donna surprises her in the kitchen, and I think this is also nefarious by Donna. She says, "Stay here as long as you want," but I think it's an excuse. It's like an apology, not an apology, but it's her way of paying Cameron something to make herself feel less guilty.
Right, like consolation for what she's done. Kind of.
Right. But it's only for Donna because Cameron doesn't know that she's done anything.
No, but Cameron picks up on something pretty quick, though.
Yeah, she does this message. Stay as long as you want that's not truthful coming from Donna. And this is what Cameron picks up on. Yeah, you're right. She's totally onto it.
And they do that really long camera pan of Cameron walking back, and it's not that far of a walk, but walking back from the kitchen back in there with Gordon, and they're just like right on her face the whole time, and you can see like, and she did a great job of that, by the way. You can see like the wheels turning.
Yeah, so I think this whole exchange was a trade by Donna to Cameron to compensate for the lie that she had with her, even though it's only all that's only known by Donna, but I think it is a compensation.
Yeah.
That's it. So then it ends. She asked Gordon, when did you know you were losing Cardiff?
Because I think there she thinks she's losing Mutiny, and I don't think she might be wrong. I think it might be even more than I think there's something a little sinister about Donna. And it's funny because we've always talked about her being the nicest Cameron in the last episode. Joe has made the nicest person in the world not talk to him anymore. And I don't know if Donna's going to continue being the nice person. I don't know if maybe Diane's rubbing off on her a little bit. I don't know.
Well, that's the conspiracy theory on the internet. People are saying Donna is now more connected to Diane than she is with Cameron. Diane's the professional person that Donna wants to emulate and not be the coder, hacker, punk girl in the headphones. She wants to be the professional, and Diane is the perfect model for that. So I don't know. I mean, I think Donna's unique between both Cameron and Diane, though. She's not one, all of one or all of the other, and probably a little bit of both.
I think she's turning a little toward the dark side. I think she might be willing to do whatever she has to do to achieve her ideal. And I think if that means maybe, and I'm just theorizing where it could go. I think maybe that means that if she has to get rid of Cameron to do that, that she'll do it. I think if Donna had to make a business decision on keeping Cameron or keeping Doug and Craig, that she'd keep Doug and Craig in that group, because that would be the smart thing to do. Cameron's great, but she's not Doug, Craig, and those other four or five people that came from Swap Meet. And I don't know if she has like these feelings of grandeur, but there's certainly something about Cameron that makes her think she can do this. She's out of touch with reality, certainly, and so is Gordon. And I think when Donna saw them sitting there playing this video game, it just feels kind of like she's the only one that has this like concrete hold on reality, and that she's now willing to do what she has to do to achieve her means.
Maybe.
But I know that's reading an awful lot into that little bitty scene.
I don't think Donna will push Cameron out. I don't want her to, and I don't think she will. Because Donna, I don't know, that would make everybody hate Donna. I think everybody kind of loves Donna. It might be interesting for the story. I don't know. I just hope she doesn't do that.
I think she might. I think she might. I think we might be surprised by Donna. That's my theory anyways, that Donna might really turn. And I don't necessarily want her to, because I really like Donna too. But I don't know. I think they're showing us that stuff for some reason. I hope it's for some reason. If it's not that reason, I hope they give us a great alternative to that reason.
Well, it could be part of her growth, her struggle to become Diane. You know, you could see somewhere you want to go, and you always kind of realize, like, I want to go there, but I don't want to be 100% of what that is. Maybe that's what Donna's going through now.
Well, that's true.
Because the company still needs the punk coder, Cameron, to keep its heart. To keep its soul. She's the soul of the company.
Yeah, but I'm kind of wondering if maybe Cameron and Craig aren't going to, like, do their own thing. Which, I mean, picture Cameron right now. She can't even keep up with what she's doing. She wants to fire Craig and Doug. And then she wants to start something else with Craig. I mean, literally, you talk about poor management. So,
well, it could be an interesting story about what happens when a company loses its soul too. I don't know.
There you go. Yep.
All right, so that's it. 304 Rules of Honorable Play, Michelle. Next week, 305 Yerba Buena. Yerba Buena was the Spanish village that became San Francisco. It used to be called Yerba Buena. So, I don't know what they're going to be doing in Yerba Buena. There's a center for cultural arts, and it's a part of San Francisco though. But that's it for 304. You have any final thoughts, and how do people reach you on the internet?
I do not. I'm thought out. And I'm on Twitter at Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets. And our website is West Coast Project. And Halt and Catch Fire is the feed for this particular series.
Yep.
I'm Michelle. So see you next week in Yerba Buena.
Okay. See you then.
Bye.